We're not getting paid for this?
What?
No. What? Okay. And we're live.
Filmmakers and photographers drinking coffee and talking shit.
Welcome to Filmmakers and Photographers Drinking Coffee and Talking Shit.
Excuse me. I'd like to butt in for a second and just thank my good friend Matt for buying me an amazing mocha.
Yeah. Mocha. You. Mocha. Cheers. Cheers.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Okay. Go ahead.
In this podcast, you'll hear insights and stories from four guys and maybe an occasional guest who have all come to the craft of visual media from very different starting points. In this episode, we're going to talk about listening more and talking less. We'll drink a little coffee and talk a little shit. Chris, let's talk about listening.
Yeah. What did you say? You
wait. What?
I think this is a good topic. You know, we've ranged in topics just in the three programs we've done. This one's a little bit more, I think, of like productivity, I would say. I think one of the more important things we do as storytellers, filmmakers, when we're telling, especially telling stories from our clients' perspective, is listening. We gotta know what they want, where they're headed, what their vision is, and the only way that's gonna be accomplished is by being a good listener. So, you know, what is a good listener? A good listener is someone that's, you know, taking in all the information they possibly can, not trying to interject themselves early in the conversation, and kind of formulating the important information, so when you do open your mouth and you do talk, you have something substantive to add to the conversation. And I think it's just it's the starting point for a successful program development for your client. So what do you guys say? What do you think?
I would think Sam Elliott and Clint Eastwood would do that quite well.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
Oh, just because everything they say.
We need to get those guys on this show.
Yeah.
When are you going to have that taken care of, Matt?
Second quarter. End of second quarter.
Yeah, I mean, it brings to mind to me, Chris, an old adage, which is, when you're speaking, you're spouting what you already know.
Yes.
Right? So
good point.
By listening is how you're able to learn new information, right? And
right.
To your point, just to echo your sentiment, that's exactly what you should be doing when you're telling other people's stories.
And it also comes down to respect. Respecting that other person that you're trying to have a conversation with and mm-hmm. learn something from.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Well, and there's a challenge to this, right? So in my role as producer, one of the things that I've found to be very difficult is, imagine you're at a trade show, right? Big trade show, thousands of people, and these people are already having conversations. They're already dialoguing with each other, and now you have to break into that conversation out of thin air. They don't know who you are. You have a camera guy behind you, and you're asking them to do something. That's very hard, and I think it's because it's very unnatural to break into someone's conversation uninvited and ask them to do something. People are expecting to listen and to be heard, and you know, at a trade show, everyone's got something they want to say.
You bet. That's a totally different take.
I mean, yeah, and so it's like, you know, from the opposite end, having to interrupt somebody and go into a spiel, it's like almost the opposite feeling of that, of being listened to. It's like, why did you just come start talking to me?
A certain etiquette, you know, I think, mm-hmm. you know, what you're talking about there. But I think, you know, we've all been involved in meetings, and it's, you know, you don't know these people, you're getting to know them, you're nervous oftentimes, and there's a tendency to start run of the mouth syndrome. And, you know, there's got to be, because there can't be any silence, you know, because it's uncomfortable. So it's this spewing of kind of inane conversation when you really should be getting to the point as quickly as possible of saying, so tell me, what are you wanting to do? And, you know, why are you wanting to do this?
Yeah.
Kick back, go into listen mode, take notes, you know, and then now you're putting yourself way ahead of the game. You'll actually have intelligent questions because you've listened to the people and what they're, you know, what they're wanting to do. So
there's a confidence in saying less. You know,
there is.
I feel like the less confidence someone has often in those environments, the more they speak.
That's right.
You know, there's also the aspect too, when you're in with a fresh client, that you want to make an impact. You know, and so there's that kind of weighing on you that it's like they're not hiring you to just sit there and smile and nod. But I think you have to break past that and really do listen. The other thing too that I've found and you know, the art of active listening and all that stuff is I think really important. One of the things that I've found with myself is that we often hear what we want to hear. You know, we have confirmation bias, especially as we go into creative projects. We think it needs to be a certain way, and so we pick up on the things that support that, but we might very well ignore the little details that don't necessarily support, you know, kind of our preconceived notions. So that's the other thing too, you know, in addition to like active listening, it's shutting down your brain and really just active, you know, hearing everything that's said and trying to not cloud it with any prejudice.
Yeah, and I also think, you know, there are going to be a lot of creatives out there where they hear this advice of listen more and talk less, right? And they say, man, you know, my first meeting, I'm really going to do that. Then you build a rapport with the client and you throw that out the window. Well, how impressive would it be to fourth project with the same client to still offer that same level of attentiveness in that discussion and really listen? Because you can't assume, because that's the thing, right? You're going to get comfortable with people. You're going to feel like you kind of know what they want or, you know how they operate. But that changes, you know, and I think it's like that in a marriage, right? It's like, yeah, you learn a lot about your partner before you marry them, but that learning should never really stop, right? You should always be trying to learn new things, and because people change, clients change, ideas change. It's always be listening.
I think we're all guilty of it. Well, maybe not Chris.
But marriage?
Most of us.
I listen a lot.
Yeah.
Especially to his wife.
Were you listening just now? When I...
What? Were you talking to me?
Wait, is it my turn?
What?
No, I think, you know, the other thing too, you know, with listening more and talking less is that it does allow you to pick up on that, like, the subtlety and nuance. You know, I've found that working with people that often they won't come out and tell you something that's very important, but it'll come out in very subtle ways, and if you miss that, you miss it completely.
Reading between the lines.
The project. Yeah, it's reading between the lines. And
well, but also having the opportunity, I mean, if you're actively listening, you know, you when they say something that requires more inquiry, or, you know, there's something there that's going on, you have the awareness to go, oh, I need to know more about that.
Yeah.
If you're talking a lot, you're, you know, those are things you're going to get, you know, miss. And also, when you're talking a lot, you're putting your client, they're kind of in a listening mode, you know, they're not conveying information, they're not communicating because you're talking.
Yeah.
So you miss those opportunities to let your client say their words, give their perspective, but also shed some light on some of these subtle things that you're talking about that really you need to be talking about. You need to find out more about it. And the only way you're going to find out about those things is if you're a good listener.
I also think it can impact the project downstream, not just in the way of what you pick up, but how your client perceives working with you. And so imagine the analogy of being at a restaurant and you're telling the waiter very specifically, I can't have this in my food, I'm allergic to it. And they don't really seem to be listening. They're spouting off about the specials, they're talking about the beer menu, and they walk away from the table and you go, God, I really want to make sure that they heard that. So when they come back, what are they going to do? You're going to say, just did you hear the thing about no meat? I wanted to make sure you heard that, right? So now to flip that over to film and what we do with our clients, you now are in a situation where if your client's not confident that you really get it, because you really weren't listening, or maybe you didn't ask some of those questions, they may be a little more hands-on. They may be a little more quick to, you know, double check on things or want to see a progress update. And let's face it, I mean, as creatives, you know, that's we love a client who does trust us and gives us that power and says, ah, show it to me when you feel ready about it, you know? But you may end up with a client who's not that way if you're not or practicing active listening, right?
Yeah, good point.
Randy. You were listening.
I was listening. I didn't want to interrupt. Like but all the more reason to bring in a notepad and practice and taking notes, because I think we're all listening to a client and all of a sudden we get this great idea and we don't want to forget that idea. Let me interrupt people because we got to spout it out.
Yeah.
If you start taking notes so you don't interrupt that person and to make sure that you don't forget that idea, this great idea that you just came up with, jotting down notes in shorthand can really help.
That's a really good tip. I actually hadn't even considered the strategy of, or what happens in your mind when, as a creative, our minds are going a million miles a minute. And to your point, you have these ideas in the middle. It's a good, I mean, we bring notepads and stuff, but you don't think about that actual instance. So yeah, that's
what
really,
happens to me. Oh,
I try really hard.
I'll think of something and then you don't want to interrupt somebody and then...
Oh, you forget it.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I can't even remember what this podcast is about.
Yeah.
Were you not listening when we started? Oh, Matt.
And here I thought it was age-related, you know. Gee, thank God it's not. Of course, we do live in Colorado, so that could have something to do with it.
Nothing to do
so,
with
Randy,
it.
You take notes. Does anyone else do anything to... you know, I'm, you know, remembering what people say, documenting what, you know, clients
sometimes
want.
I'll just hit the recorder on my cell phone.
Yeah.
I've done that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Taking notes, jot them down, the highlights, the bullet points. And I try and keep notes fairly short, but I also do have a tendency to, like, in the moment, like, I'll write, like, one word down, and then I'll look back at it later and go, what was I trying to tell myself, you know?
But I still think old school is better than... digital voice recorder, and then you got to deal with it later and add one more thing to the list.
Yeah, there's a perception about having a screen in front of you versus a notepad that indicates your level of attentiveness. In our team meetings at work, we went from everybody having their laptops open, so you can only see from, like, you know, the nose up, to saying, let's make this a screen-free
no
meeting.
Devices.
No devices.
Couldn't agree more.
And even though you're still looking down and you're writing a note, there is, I think it's a perception thing that with a screen up, you're being less attentive. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's more opportunities for distraction.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. Especially during the day.
Somebody's got Facebook open or whatever.
Yeah. An email comes in and you check it.
You know, and we're all...
You've got a wasp that's very much interested in...
is that an actual wasp?
It's a bee.
It's some sort of... Wow, man. So we do have a bee. For all of you listening.
Insect.
There's
and
insects.
Sean's deathly afraid of insects and the like.
I've gotten better since I became a dad. My son, this anecdote, not film related, but still good content, right? My son went, he's 2 years old. He went to the dollar store and found this giant fake black plastic spider.
Fantastic.
And what he's, of course, what 2-year-olds do is they leave things in random places. So you can imagine what the last few months at my house have been like. You step out of the bathroom and you see a giant black spider in the middle of the floor. But I think what that's done is got me used to seeing big black insects around, so I'm not quite as scared. Getting better. My wife had to kill a wasp today in the house, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Poor wasp.
Yeah. Well, you know. They don't make honey, and they just sting you and bite you, so.
Yeah. All right, guys. Let's talk about the coolest shit that we've seen. Mine, pretty simple. If you've updated to iOS 12, there's the new measuring app. Yeah. Has anybody tried it yet?
So
it's
cool.
Pretty cool.
I haven't
it
updated.
Uses the camera. And you basically pick a couple of fixed points, and it will tell you the measurement of those on your camera. So if I wanted to say, like, you know, how wide is this table that we're sitting at, my iPhone would be able to tell me exactly how wide the dimensions of this.
For how far?
Using the camera. I don't know. I haven't tested it to, you know, could you measure the size of a building? I think it's meant for... You know,
so it's an app that...
it's an app, and it's built into iOS, and it's called Measure.
I haven't...
augmented reality.
6x6 elk, it's what? Approximately 325 yards away.
Yeah, I actually was so curious about this measurement app to see how accurate it was that I took one of our coworkers, we call him Weeby. He's got a bunch of rulers, one's 24 inches long. So I stuck this thing on the desk and I busted out the measurement app and I said, I wonder if it'll be like 23 something, 25 something. Smack on the nose.
It was exactly right.
24 inches.
Does it
to
have
the ruler.
24 on the ruler though?
Well, it does, but it's funny because the app isn't, you know, it's yeah. base, like if I had stopped it in the middle of the ruler at 12, you know, or kept going, right? Because mm-hmm. you can set those points, but
think about it. It knows focal length. Mm-hmm. So the camera knows mm-hmm. how far away something is because it knows yes. where it's focused.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And so then it's just a matter
triangular
of
measurement.
Math.
Yeah. Rangefinder.
It knows the distance yeah. and the angle.
It's actually kind of simple, and yeah. but still really cool.
Well, and yeah. it's really cool because what you can do is because you're using the camera, you could go completely off that thing that you were measuring and then come back to it, and it still sees that area. It recognizes that this is the area you just measured. So you can actually have multiple measurements around the room. Be like, okay, that window's this many inches, and this thing is this many inches. Yeah. And literally now that augmented reality of the view of your room, man, I think that's so cool.
Who needs to learn trig anymore?
Exactly, yeah.
Next podcast topic, is technology making us smarter or dumber?
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
So, Sean, any cool shit you've seen?
Yeah, lately? I mean, in that's a good one. I know we were talking about that today. Yeah, I don't know. I think I've been using, and I'll go back towards film and media, and this is probably old news to everybody watching and listening, but multicam editing in Premiere. The first time I saw that was in someone else's project. We had hired a freelancer to do some work for us. We shot interviews with two cameras. My, you know, view of the world was always you just find a point and sync them up and you edit from there. Yeah. And you chop and you slice. And I went into this guy's timeline and saw this MC 1 and 2 thing going on. I'm like, what is this? Yeah. And I looked into it and, man, it just... And so, you know, the technology itself, like I said, is old. It's not new. But I've just found more and more uses for even just being able to sync that kind of stuff. So, for example, when we record the podcast... running our, we have two different recorders that are recording two different sets of microphones since there are four of us. And in Audition, which is the audio editing, program in Adobe, it doesn't have a simple synchronize setting. It has automatic speech alignment. And the difference being is that for us, we don't want it to stretch. I mean, this is real time. These recordings should match, right? We're not taking recording A and recording B and trying to fake that they match. Mm-hmm. They're using it for things like ADR, right?
Yeah, so if I said the same thing Sean just said, they're using it for, I don't even remember, I wasn't actively listening to what he was saying, but you know, if Sean said something and I said the exact same thing, I could match my voice to Sean's tempo. So I could make, mm-hmm. so for video purposes, I could use my voice, but it would look like Sean talking kind uh-huh. of thing. That's what it's intended.
And what it does though, inherently, is it stretches time a little bit to make that fit. Whereas it will not just simply take two clips and find the points where they match and line them up. It will always try and stretch the two clips to fit. And we found this out, we did a test today, where we recorded the same voice memo. We both hit record, one on Matt's phone, one on my phone. And so they essentially were the exact same recording, right? Mm-hmm. One maybe started a few seconds different, but they should have the same tracks. Maybe one with Matt louder, one with me louder. But when we got in there, it tried to stretch to fit my shorter clip to his longer clip.
It was weird.
And it was very strange.
And the voice really changed, I would think.
What it does, it didn't change pitch, and that's important too, right?
Yeah.
It's going to maintain pitch, but stretch the rate. So if I said, you know, Old MacDonald had a farm, and that was too short, it would have me in the same tone going, Old MacDonald had a farm. It would try and stretch one of those syllables.
Wild.
And it was very strange, and it wasn't what we needed.
Right.
Well, cue Premiere,
yeah.
and all of a sudden I could take those two audio clips, no video,
yeah.
and just select them both, hit synchronize, and boom. It worked. It aligned them, and it didn't have that stretch problem. So just, I guess, a cool way or a cool topic to bring up is that you can use these things in multiple ways.
Yeah.
You know, don't be pigeonholed by this is audio and this is a video program.
Right.
Sometimes the best solution for your audio is in your video program.
Absolutely.
So it would sync up. So you would say, "Oh, McDonald had a farm," and you would say it at different speeds, and it would sync those two up.
You pick because, the master and the slave, that's not if how, you will, in it, and it'll yeah,
it'll, and it'll sync it up. Yeah. Up. Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's for ADR, I think.
Right. So imagine you're trying to perform or reperform your line, and you set it just a tad slower.
Yeah.
But the video is faster. It's going to compress or stretch your new audio to match what was originally cued in the video. So your lips are still moving. It's going to say, I got to make it fit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very, we'll look at it sometime. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
But not exactly what we were going for, right?
Yeah.
So what does ADR stand for anyways?
Automatic dialogue replacement.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Although there's really nothing automatic about it, is there? It's a very manual process.
Yeah. Is that what it stands for?
Automated.
Automated, I think.
Yeah. Not automatic, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
I wish it was automatic. Yeah.
And the way that at least it used to work is you would have like a loop. It would basically continually record over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And people would say the dialogue and say the dialogue and say the dialogue until it got, you know,
timing
was kind of perfect. But
and imagine doing that for a 2-hour movie.
Right. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Hopefully not too much of that needs to be replaced.
Right.
Yeah. Chris and Randy, what's some cool shit you guys have seen?
One thing that's come out on a software level that I have not physically got my hands on yet, but I'm looking to. I'm kind of excited to check it out. Is I like color grading a lot. A fellow by the name of Denver Riddle of Color Grading Central came out with something called CinemaGrade. And I'm excited to take that for a spin. And it's kind of a new take on color grading and a little more of a visual approach. Some automation built in. And looking to check that out. And you can use that within as a plugin for your favorite video editing.
Premiere,
Final PC. Cut, and also my favorite, DaVinci Resolve, but I think I was reading it's a light version, so it's a little bit different on Resolve, so I don't know for sure how deep it goes. But you're basically going in, clicking on a spot visually in the image, and adjusting exposure, color, versus just using, you know, color wheels. As an example.
That's cool.
Or curves.
Yeah,
Taking it more visually versus technical and scopes.
Mm-hmm.
But people wanted their scopes still, so they just added scopes. So.
Yeah, that's cool.
Which I agree, so
I'm
looking to test it out.
Yeah.
Cool, man. Well, when will you be done testing that?
Yeah.
When will you be done?
The end of second quarter.
End of second quarter. Okay. Chris,
any cool shit you've seen lately? Phantom 5. I saw some early photos of the device. It's a little sleeker, so it has a kind of a visual thing. I think they do that just for aesthetics, just to go, see, it's the new model.
It's new.
It goes faster because it looks sleeker, you know.
Yeah, right.
But it has a very much beefed up camera, bigger lens. So they're trying to go a little bit towards that Inspire side.
Interchangeable lenses, or
no? I don't think it is.
Zoom lens?
I don't know. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that was one of the big speculations on the Phantom, is that they'd allow you to be able to switch out the lenses, maybe.
Yeah, it could be.
They don't want to undercut the Inspire, so who knows?
I mean, I think the Inspire still has a bigger camera, more robust. But so looking for more info on that, you know, coming down the pike. So anxious to see what that's going to develop into.
Yeah. If anybody has any experience or comments with the Phantom 5,
post
below your comments. We'll talk about you on our next podcast.
Cool.
Right?
This is non-techie, but when it comes involved to drones and aerials, what is your favorite shot, your favorite view? Is it oblique? Does it have the horizon in it? Do you have one?
I've got a couple. One that I think is pretty simple is a circular kind of point of interest shot, so that you circle around something, you know. The orbit shot.
That's what I like. You orbit.
And then the other one I like is where you, on the Phantom, you can set it to go a certain, and on the Mavic, you can set it to go a certain way, and then your camera's free to do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, because the craft is always going to go this way, back and forth.
Like on
and
a cable cam, kind of.
Yeah, and then you can do whatever you want. So those are a couple shots that I think are cinematic and interesting looking, other than just risers or going past something, you know, stuff like that.
I think everybody has their favorites.
Well, you know, it's funny. You actually got a really cool shot that you ended up using in the CW project. And it's just a very simple, the drone was pointed, we were filming a field, and there was a tractor in the field. And the shot, it was flying away from the tractor, if I remember correctly. And so it's kind of pulling back to reveal more and more, but the camera started pointed down at the field and then slowly rose up to give you more of that horizontal plane of view, right? So you weren't looking down, you were now looking
across. It was a compound move.
It was great.
It was brilliant.
It was very cinematic because it revealed the tractor it revealed the tractor well, and you know, kudos to Matt for being patient to wait for this thing to get into the spot. And then do the move and pull it off. And even more kudos to you, Randy, for out of all that footage, picking that one to get in there. But yeah, I mean, just a great example of like using that drone and getting it, not just flying it over a field or rising it up and down, but using two different movements, the moving away from the subject to open up that point of view, and then to change, you know, the perspective of the camera at the same time. Really neat.
All to service the story.
All to service the story, and it did. You know?
Yeah, it really did. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, it's getting to that point with the drone where you just feel it in the controllers. You're not thinking about, okay, I need to go up, and you've just got to have it that.
It really helps when you're a gamer as a child.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
that's where I suffer.
Absolutely. My favorite shot with the drone is to shoot in 4K and then do where you're either pulling out. Or you're pushing in, and you combine that with in post pulling out or pushing in.
Yes.
So you get that Hitchcock dolly move.
Mm. Yeah,
love that, especially with like mountains and you've got stacked mountains and you compress that space.
Spacey looking shots.
And so that's what the new Mavic, the Mavic Pro 2 with the zoom lens, whatever the hell they're calling that one, you'll be able to do that effect theoretically in camera, you know, because you'll be able to push in and be zooming out or in. Vice versa.
Wow.
With the drone.
It'll be interesting to see if they'll let you, kind of like on a slider, program that in. So say, here are my two points I want the drone to fly between. And then, you know, as it moves from point A to point B, go from this focal range to this focal range. And then that way
why
you don't
not
have to touch it.
Yeah.
You just say, okay, play, and it resets and does it again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you say, no, that wasn't just too fast or too slow. You could adjust those things. But to not actually have to manually adjust that as you're flying the drone, that would really, because then you can design shots.
Yeah.
Try them. Nope. Okay, let's tweak some settings. Let the drone do the work. You're not actually having to manipulate it.
Which
you're
also
just dialing it in.
Yeah. Brings up your other comment of having the patience to go through all of the footage.
that's a whole nother episode, isn't
that
it?
That is a whole nother episode.
Absolutely.
Because that is not always easy to do, because you just want to.
Yeah, that'll work.
In the next episode, we're going to get into some kind of automation stuff with sliders and gimbals and drones and that kind of stuff, so we can expand on that topic.
Yeah, great.
A little bit more. Let's talk coffee real quick.
Well, I guess as usual, this is my portion. I thought of a cool topic to talk about with coffee. So I think we've gone around. We'll do this again just for the sake of the topic. But how many cups of coffee a day? On average, would you drink, Chris? Drank coffee.
No, I probably drink maybe 2 or 3 cups a week.
Okay. Randy? Yeah.
I have cut back to, I used to do drip coffee, and I used to probably drink a pot a day.
Okay.
And now that I have my fancy new little machine and I kind of make Americanos, I am down to 2 cups a day.
Okay. And Matt? And I'm going somewhere with this.
It depends. I do drink coffee every single day. And I would say on a light day, I'll have maybe, and cups is such a relative thing. Like what is a cup of coffee?
It's like how many alcoholic drinks? Well, you know, I'm not taking 4 shots, but I might have 4
How many beers did you have? Well, I only had 1 beer. It was 24 ounces, but I only had 1 beer. That doesn't quite count. So I would say I probably drink about 20 ounces of coffee a day on the low end to, I can blow through my 10 cup. Coffee pot, which I don't know, that's maybe 30 ounces or something a day.
Wow.
And so like
I could do that too.
On the weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tend to drink more in the winter, not to interrupt.
Well, that makes perfect sense. A warm drink, cold day, it's
so
comfort. So the reason I bring that up is because I recently came across a post. There's a very well-known barista on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook from Germany called Juritan Alcela, and he's a great latte artist. He's got Latte University and stuff, and he put a post out there as a poll on Facebook to say, all right, baristas of the world, people who are around coffee all the time and have access to the greatest coffee-making tools and the best coffee, how much coffee do you guys drink a day? And I thought this was such a great question because I'm like, it'd be like, you know, well, as a photographer, do you shoot your own family pictures? Or like, hey, if you're a hairdresser, who cuts your hair? You know, like it's the same sort of deal in a way. So I looked at this and I was kind of scared because I'm like, oh man, you know, like caffeine is not great for you, you know, in large amounts. Coffee's not great for your teeth. And there's all these things. So you're like, oh my God, am I drinking too much coffee? Well, it turns out, I mean, 2 to 3 cups a day, even espressos, you know, an espresso or a latte, that's actually kind of average. And even baristas who are around coffee all day, that's about what the average answer was 2 to 3 maybe.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, 3 espressos may sound like a lot, but spaced out. I mean, you have one at 7 a.m. before you leave for the day. Mm-hmm. You maybe have one, you know, at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and then another one at 8 o'clock, you know, mm-hmm. when you're winding down for the day and you have your cup of coffee while you're watching your show or whatever. Right. It really doesn't, you're not jittery all day. You're not freaking out all day. So I was kind of surprised to see, but happy to see that, you know, even people who are around coffee all the time, it's not like, oh, well, I drink 6 cups a day. Or that they weren't like, well, as a barista who's been drinking coffee my whole life, it's really important that I'm not drinking that much coffee because it's killing me, so only 1 a month. Yeah. You know, like that was kind of nice too. So, yeah, that's the topic of coffee for today is even baristas and people who are really into coffee, they drink a normal amount.
All you know? Things
the
in
health
moderation.
Profession that's keeps right. changing, you know, what's good and bad as well. So.
Right. Coffee used to be, hey, you know, a cup of coffee a day is going to have you live to 110.
Well, that's the last I heard. So have they reverted back to...
No, that's the latest.
I mean, I think the biggest thing, you know, is like, you know, for me, because I really started drinking a couple lattes every day, there were a couple things I did to make sure that that wasn't going to completely destroy me. One of them was like, if I eat cereal now, instead of putting additional dairy milk in my cereal, switch that to almond milk.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't like to just drink straight almond milk, but in cereal or something,
there's
not that big of a difference. So now I've cut down all my dairy because I'm adding the dairy in with my lattes. And the other thing, too, is just reducing my cup size. A 12-ounce drink is a lot, even if it's, you know, coconut milk or almond milk or whatever. It's a lot of liquid.
Yeah.
So I cut that down to 8 ounces. So there are things like that that I would do. You know, to make sure that my coffee habit wasn't going to completely, you know,
balance
be
it with that water.
Detrimental to my health. So.
Well, I still get a hell of a buzz. I mean, just on a cup of coffee, I'm just like, whoa. I mean, I can feel it, you know, very distinctly. So, you know, it does have its benefits for not being a daily drinker.
Yeah.
Matt, we drink too much coffee.
I don't think you can drink too much coffee. And my opinion on the like the barista thing, and it's good to hear that they're averaging 2 to 3 cups a day. It's kind of like never trust a skinny chef. I don't think I would trust a barista that doesn't drink at least 2 to 3 a day.
Yeah. Don't trust a skinny chef. I like that. And it's true. Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Now let's talk geeky tech shit. So Sean just recently got a new fancy MacBook Pro, actually 2 of them. How did you end up with 2 brand new top of the line MacBook Pros?
I stole them. No, you stole them. And they fell off the back of the truck.
You know, and then just yesterday or 2 days ago, Microsoft released the new Surface Pro 6 and the new Surface Studio. So let's talk geeky tech shit in the light of platforms, Mac and Windows, and first let's hear Sean's story of how he ended up with 2 brand new top-of-the-line MacBook Pros.
I'll keep this short since I just owned the last segment. I bought a iMac, 27-inch iMac in 2009 for myself, and I used that for almost 10 years, and then very recently it wouldn't boot, and I went to Matt, who knows a lot about computers, and my buddy Ethan, who works in IT, and we did everything we could to try and bring this thing back from the dead. We got it up just long enough for me to back up all of my data to the cloud, and then it never booted again. So I made the decision after some research to keep it with Mac, just because I have an iPhone and, you know, iTunes and all the things that kind of connect that, you know, made sense to keep with Mac. And then again, I also realized that, you know, because I do so much creative work, that I wanted to make sure that this computer was going to last me possibly another 10 years like my last one did, right? These are not cheap purchases, they're investments. So I bit the bullet and I bought the new i9 quad core, I think is what it
six
is.
Six core. Oh, right?
Yeah, right. Six core i9 MacBook Pro. Hmm. And I mean, it's beautiful. I love the space gray look. I love the giant trackpad. The touch bar is a bit of a gimmick for me, just because it's another thing that could break. And it's all they really did was replace physical buttons with a non-physical thing. So unless you're going to represent something that could not be represented physically, I think that was just kind of a gimmick. But it is a beautiful machine. I haven't really gotten a chance to put it through its real paces yet. That's something we're going to try when I get my new work computer up and running. So that's my personal Mac. And then because I handle all of the video editing and video production for our group at our company, they replaced my 2015 MacBook Pro with the new MacBook Pro. So that's why I have two. I have one for work and one at home. And the one for work, we're going to do a speed test on when we get it fully up and running, everything installed on it, render a 4K timeline on it, and the same 4K timeline on my old one, and clock the difference in speed.
Now, why did you go, especially at work, with that versus an iMac?
Well, with the iMac, because it's not portable, would be the biggest thing. So I work a lot when I travel, in hotel rooms, things like that, work a lot from home. And so having the portability of the laptop, and ultimately that kind of swayed my decision at home too. It's nice to know that you can take it with you if you need to. If you're going to do a tethered photo shoot and you want to have that computer there, so much easier to bring a laptop. And this actually leads me to something else. We touched on this back when it was like, what could I go back and tell myself? I used to think that getting the biggest possible screen was the best thing, and now having traveled so much, I would go smaller, and that's going to be for our next, maybe one of our next episodes.
Because you can always plug it into a monitor.
And, that's right. Right. That's right. So yeah, portability and transportability.
But cool. But they keeps up with 4K and.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? I mean, so with the new i9 6-core processor, it's really supposed to be almost like 60% faster than the last one in render time and playback, and they advertise up to 4K video streams. Now, granted, that's on Final Cut Pro. And listeners, please chime in. If you've used both Final Cut Pro and Premiere and you have a preference, chime in and tell us why. Comment, because this is something Matt and I have been hearing a lot about recently, is that with these newer, faster computers, yeah, you know, you can render a 4K timeline 60% faster, but you could render it like 80% faster if you go on Final Cut versus Premiere. Mm. So we've been hearing a lot of things about how if you're on a Mac, Final Cut Pro is so much faster than Premiere. We've yet to see that ourselves, but we've heard a lot about it. So interesting. Very interesting.
Solid state media, or you're using RAIDs. I mean, that all factors in.
It sure does. Yeah, it really does. And actually, on that same point, I recently made the switch from having all my memory in my computer, which, if you guys know, buying Apple computers is incredibly expensive. You can get the same amount of storage, or sorry, six times the amount of storage for the same price by getting an external drive. And since that's basically how we work at our office anyway, everything's either synced, you know, to a Dropbox, or you're keeping it on a RAID or a hard drive. You're never actually storing that media on your machine, especially in video. I made that fundamental switch. I used to have a 2 terabyte hard drive on my iMac, and it basically stored every single project, every photo shoot I did for, you know, the past 10 years on that machine. And now with my new computer, I store almost nothing locally on the machine. I store it all to an external hard drive and just use the machine to drive.
Run smoother.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be a lot safer too.
Exactly. Yeah. Much more redundant. So.
Yeah.
So Mac versus PC.
Yeah. Chris, you're on PC.
Well, I don't have your, you know, Ferrari to, you know, to play with and test.
But why do you like PC?
You know, it's like we moved off Mac because we were no longer using Final Cut Pro. When they totally dumbed it down and changed it radically, you know, we jumped on to, that's when we kind of transferred over to the PC system.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, there was no reason to. And I, at that point, I was, quite frankly, I was kind of ticked off at Apple. You know, I'd been through their technological, their hardware changes, a couple of those cycles where, but we're no longer supporting this, you know, got to get rid of all of it, you know. So as a business owner, you know, these are just like expenses that come up and, you know, unexpected. And there's oftentimes there's no avenue other than just limping along as you can before you change over. But yeah, we changed over to PCs a few years ago and everything has worked great. Really haven't had any issues where we would look back and go, gosh, I wish, you know, with our Apple, we could do this and we can't do that now. I mean, I'm sure those things do exist, but they didn't really have a big impact on us, you know, moving over to a different platform. Of course, you know, the cost and everything that is so much lesser on a PC, but you know, definitely there are some distinct advantages with Apple. They've got a very closed system computer that they, you know, have specialized with hardware and software and everything on there, where it's a brave new world with PC because you have to have that compatibility to reach across so many devices and pieces of software and software that, you know, is compatible with older versions. And so, you know, your PC, definitely you're gonna, you mentioned, you know, well, I never have a driver issue come up.
Yeah.
Well, I do. And these are some of the things that go with that territory that you
right.
just, you know, that's part of the picture. So you just gotta deal with it.
But that there's no cost associated with updating a driver usually, right?
Time.
So it's, and so there's the trade-off,
time
right? It's
money.
Like,
yeah.
You know, Chris, for you, these things that, yeah, they may be a little bit of a time suck or a bit of an inconvenience, but
yeah.
in the long run, they're really saving you financially from having to continue to update all of these computers
yeah.
with new machines. You're able to live on your PCs for so much longer. Or if you did have to upgrade, build a much more powerful machine
right.
at a much lower cost point.
I don't believe right. that holds true. I would
By
actually
the time you
be willing
the
to bet
hardware,
in the professional
okay.
space that the lifespan of a professional level Mac versus a professional level PC is about the same. I mean, yeah, PCs, if you build your own, you could potentially swap out components. But if you go to faster processor, faster RAM, you're going to need a faster motherboard, a bigger power supply.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you get to keep the box, but that's a pretty inconsequential
well,
piece of the
equation.
I don't
know. I mean, as the purchasing manager of a small company,
yeah.
I would say, you know, when
you don't
we,
have a guy for that?
Yeah, that and more. Twizzle sticks as well. You know, looking at, because we did price it, you know, we did look at it, and, you know, it was the donut workstation, you know, or whatever
mm-hmm.
that they had there. And so, you know, we looked at that, and that was like $5,000 or
mm-hmm.
$4,000 or something. And, you know, I think, are they using like, they're not using iChips in those. I think
no, those were Xeon.
Xeon chips,
mm-hmm.
right. But looking at performance of not using Xeon, but a similar CPU, we could get into it for a fraction, you know, much, much lower cost.
Yeah.
What about being a lifelong Mac user and never, ever using a PC? What about jumping in and learning a new operating
well,
system?
That's
is that a big deal? Or?
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It's a very big deal.
Well, it's funny you mention that because I used a PC all while I was growing up, right? So in my childhood, we had a computer in the house probably from the time I was maybe 12 or 13. I remember our first like Packard Bell with like the, you know, the horizontal base and then the screen that sat on top and
right.
hard drive and a floppy disk drive and, you know, all that. And so everything I did as a kid was on Windows and I got familiar with the start button and my computer and all that stuff. Switching to a Mac took a little getting used to, but it didn't like completely mess my world up. But recently I've had the opportunity to then get on someone's like new Windows machine and how their operating system is now. And I'm like, how do you live like this? You know, like it totally threw me for a loop.
That's
so
how I would
it's
be.
almost like to jump from PC to Mac, you probably get by pretty good. If you've been on Mac forever and then jump to a PC, there's going to be a bit of a curve, I would say.
Yeah. There's some subtleties to it. I mean, there's some nice, really nice things in Windows that I like, Windows 10. You put a gun to my head and make me choose, I'm going to choose a Mac 10 times out of 10. But I mean, specifically on the Surface device, I mean, right now I carry a MacBook Pro and an iPad Pro with me wherever I go. And the idea that I could just carry one device with the Surface Pro, I like that. I haven't jumped yet. Actually, I have a Surface Pro, MacBook Pro, and an iPad Pro. So I think I'm taking a step in the wrong direction.
Do you carry all three of those wherever you go?
No.
Why do you need the iPad along with your MacBook Pro?
Because I like to sketch. Okay. I also like the portability of it. I like how fast it is. What I would really like to get to is where an iPad Pro can replace me carrying around my MacBook Pro, and a lot of times, to be honest, it does. And maybe in a future episode, we can talk a little bit about mobile and, you know, using things like LumaFusion and Lightroom and stuff on an iPad for video and photo editing.
And in that same discussion, talking about what does that computer of the future look like? Because there are some things I thought Apple would do that they didn't do. So we'll get into that. Oh, is that it right there?
Your phone is much more, you know, technologically advanced than this old thing. But I mean, wouldn't you agree this is where it's all heading?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, probably in your pocket to a large degree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because they've grown the size of these screens now. I mean, even the Samsung device is, you know,
but
bigger.
You wouldn't want to edit a full program on that thing. So but for guys like us, it would never fully replace, but the capability to do certain things. I think that's where the discussion.
I wonder if it's going to be voice driven, though. You know, you're going to go, you know, cut here. Do this, that. So it's all voice. You know,
that would take a little bit of the fun out of it.
It'll link up to your brain, and it'll just read your brain as well.
You know? I already have the fonts on my phone as large as they'll go. Just so I can
noticed
read them.
I noticed that. You know where contacts are? They?
No.
Oh, wow.
And I had LASIKs, but they told me.
They're called bifocals.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen, I think that we have contributed all we can to this podcast.
Yeah.
As always, it's a pleasure to sit down with you all.
Same.
Talk about our craft and drink some coffee. For those of you brave enough to listen to this podcast, please make sure you've subscribed on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Share it with your friends and colleagues and go out and make something. On the next episode, we're going to talk about travel.